Good morning, everyone. Thank you for being here. I can see we all have our legislative faces on. the fatigue and the disappointments and the confusion and frustrations. But you have them on, and we still got a long way to go. You know, so this meeting was called specifically so that we can see where we are at. You know, this is really our first attempt to, we as a commission, how do we navigate the legislative session? You know, and we're learning a lot, you know, and I appreciate all the help that I've been getting from the community in helping me navigate and learning the process of how to navigate the legislature with no staff. So, with that being said, let's look at our agenda. And today we're just talking about legislative issues as indicated on the agenda. So I want to open up for the testimony on what you guys experienced and shed some light on some of the bills that were close to your heart, which is our agenda item for today. Hands. Go ahead, Kat.
Well, we're bumping up against First Lateral, so we only actually have like four days when bills that have three referrals to second committee to hear it in the next 4 days. So there's a lot of bills that could die. And I've been trying to see which bills have Senate companions or House companions, so to keep one alive. But I haven't finished that list yet because the bills are coming. The agendas are super long. And I've been in hearings most of the day, so it's really been trying. It looks like the bill to fix the statute to people should be released at their minimum, that looks like it's moving. And I'm hopeful. I think Bob would like to talk to you about 2516, which is his bill that he talked about at the last meeting. And that had quite a hearing yesterday. So Bob, do you want to talk about that?
You done, Kat?
Go talk about, yeah, that's fine.
Thank you, Kat. Bob, I'll just go down the list as seen on my TV.
Okay. Thank you, Mark, and members of the commission. On House Bill 2516, there was a huge turnout for it. There were 15 separate organizations testified in favor of the bill, in support of the bill, including Native Hawaiian Legal Corporation, the Office of Hawaiian Affairs, ACLU Hawaii, and I could go on and on. 44 individuals testified in support of the bill. And in the end, they gutted the bill. The only thing they kept and the only thing they did that's worthwhile is they said that this commission has to be a, quote, full partner in the planning process going forward, but it did not pause anything. It did not engage the community in any way, shape, or form. It did not say, you know, that's all it does. So what was intended to be a pause is not a pause. Everything is moving full speed ahead. The only thing is you guys will get to sit at the table, but frankly, you've been at the table the whole time anyway. Nobody has ever listened to you, and I don't see any reason why they would start now. So the bill is really a disappointment, you know, but if it passes in May, but, you know, by May, who knows? We may have the governor signing a contract for a new jail. I don't know. But there's no pause. Everything moves full speed ahead. There's no community involvement at all. Only the commission's involvement. So that's the bottom line.
Thank you, Bob. We'll have further discussion later on in the agenda. Appreciate your time. Anybody else want to make a comment on our testimony? I'm sorry, I thought I was in the session. Go ahead, Carrie Ann.
Good morning, commissioners. Carrie Ann on behalf of the ACLU. So I just want to provide an update on some of the ACLU bills in addition to comments that shared by Kat and Bob. On the bail bills that we've brought forward to you, unfortunately, we have not had a hearing on both the House or Senate side on the preferred bail bill. As you may recall, there is a more moderate slash conservative bill that's been resurrected from last year. It did get one hearing, but it hasn't moved to the second committee yet. And we still are advocating to have a hearing on those bills, either House or Senate, whichever chamber is willing to hear it, to have the community weigh in. And we believe that the Oversight Commission, if there is a hearing, take a strong position in support of that measure, which is HB 2017 or SB 2778-2871. The difference being that the other, quote, conservative measure has so many carve-outs, so many exceptions, mm-hmm. It really would do very little to release the number of people and the severe overcrowding in all of our jails throughout Hawaii. And so part of it, I mean, to be quite frank, you know, there's this attempt to appear like we're doing something different, but we're just reinforcing the status quo. We're doing incremental reforms, but there is such severe overcrowding. We cannot afford to do that. And we know that we can safely reduce the population as we've done during COVID through court orders, but we don't have to wait for the court. We can do it through a law. And I also think that this is something for the legislature and the community to consider, that in other states, there were attempts to do substantial bail reform, and they were unsuccessful through legislation. And so it led to some organizations filing lawsuits to deem challenging that the current practice is unconstitutional. Do we want to wait for that to occur, or do we want to take some legislative action? And so we're noticing that the legislative bodies, lawmakers have, though, been making some comments recently. They want to hear from the Oversight Commission. In particular, thank you for submitting testimony. I know it's really difficult. You don't have staff. But in one committee hearing, I think it was Chair Ono had said, well, we don't want to take any make any decision on this measure until we hear from the Oversight Commission. And again, that's their catch-22 situation because you don't have staff. So we just encourage you, if that hearing is scheduled, which we're still pushing for, that you should advocate for that. On the parole and probation, we've had a hearing on SB 2514, probation reform, SB 2515, parole. The parole measure was deferred, unfortunately. The 2514 probation reform has a number of amendments, but it hopefully will move through to the next committee. We're also pressing, and we received a verbal commitment. We heard that Chair Ono is going to be scheduling a hearing for the probation, parole, and the clean slate. And that does bring us back to clean slate. I just want to emphasize that because we have not had a hearing yet on either the HB 2343, SB 3159. And that's very critical because we've heard from so many people in our community who are justice impacted, how this bill would make such a difference in their life. You know, a criminal record should not be a lifetime sentence. And in fact, it is. It's a barrier to reentry in terms of employment, housing. It can even impact parental rights, so many different levels, thousands of ways of which there are barriers in place. So if we're able to get a hearing, and if you have the capacity, the bandwidth to even contact your personal representatives or leadership, please ask them to hold hearings on all of these bills. And just finally, I want to comment that, again, we shared with you the reason why we selected these particular bills. There's so many other ones as well, but we're trying to push for systemic changes in the system. If we can reform on the pretrial end, we can decrease the population. Our jails would not be overcrowded on every island. And if we institute probation and parole reform, we also could then decrease the number of new admissions based upon technical violations, would decrease the prison populations, and can also bring people back home from Saguaro. And then on the tail end, clean slate is necessary for people to be able to rebuild their lives and move forward, not just for themselves, but for their families and our entire community. And so we are taking this landscape view of systemic changes, and we ask that you join us. The reentry measures that are out there are also very important in appropriations, but we do have concerns about continuing to put money within the Department of Public Safety at times when we've heard from providers that they can either withhold contracts or narrow the scope or really put a limit on how many people could be served in the community. And so we are raising questions with lawmakers that if there's funding for reentry, to maybe consider for bills for healthcare, substance use, to perhaps have it placed in the Department of Health. And if it's relating to housing and human services, to then place it with DHS, because we all need all agencies working on these systemic issues, which has ripple effects in so many areas. And I don't think we can only think that Department of Public Safety should be tasked with this responsibility, particularly if they have not been accountable with other reentry funding in the past. And so we want further transparency. We also want to see outcomes. And we ask that you join us in pushing for these systemic changes. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Carrie Ann.
Mark, I had a question.
Go ahead.
For Carrie Ann, Mike Town here. I've been in 6 days of arbitration, so I'm moving fast and moving slowly. Where are we on cash bail? When are the hearings on doing away with cash bail? Because the obvious thing is, if people don't go in to custody, then you know, they can get the services out there. And I believe in private ordering. You don't need to micromanage everybody. Where are we?
So thank you for asking that, Judge. Okay, so there was only a hearing on HB 1567, which was heard by Judiciary Hawaiian Affairs. It did move out of committee. Well, it has not been scheduled for the second committee. But again, the preferred bills that the ACLU is supporting, SB 2778, 2871, and HB 2017, there's been no hearing yet. And this is where we are having community members we know are calling and asking for a committee hearing in Judiciary with Representative Nakashima. We actually scheduled a meeting with Representative Nakashima and Speaker Saiki. We're told that it's been postponed, but we are advocating with leadership to emphasize the urgency of having these bills heard this session. We can longer wait. I think it's also very telling that at the same time where the government is essentially saying state that we need to build more new jails because it's inhumane and it's severely overcrowding, well, here's the vehicles to significantly decrease the jail population. And so the fact that there isn't further support for those bills rings hollow these claims that we want to build more jails for humanitarian reasons, because there is definitely stonewalling behind the scenes to not have some of these bills heard, despite community members calling. And so I'm hopeful that there's still time, that we will have some lawmakers to step up and be smart justice champions this legislative session, so that we don't have to wait for more people to die in jail, or for more people to be torn apart from their families. So that to the extent that you're able to push and request release a hearing. I mean, in terms of the democracy we keep hearing about, we'd like to at least have a hearing so the community can weigh on it. Now, ultimately, the decision that comes from the committee, they might merge some of the standards, they might incorporate some provisions from the other bills together. But unless we get a hearing, if we don't get a hearing, that's very telling to me. And it's a signal to the Oversight Commission and the community that there really is no true interest in doing systemic changes, that we just want to build a new jail and that's just what we're going to do. But we're going to give sort of this appearance that we want to hear from the community, because the community has been saying we need bail reform on every island. And we know that if we change bail reform, we can decrease the population as proven in other jurisdictions, anywhere from 25 up to 40%. And if we do the math, if you take the capacity at every single jail, Maui, Hawaii Island, OCCC, Kauai, and you decrease the population from 20 to 40%, we will not have an overcrowding issue. We will actually fall below not only just operational capacity, but design capacity. So again, where do we put our resources? Do we decrease people on the front end, which saves money, and divert it to resources in the community, or we just keep building jails and we make consultants who are making millions more wealthy? It really is a values choice. And I'm hoping ultimately our lawmakers will stand up and support systemic changes to bail.
Carrie Ann, short follow-up.
Long answer, Judge.
I want a short answer too. Do you think the legislature understands, and the chair and the co-chair, California, Henry Humphreys, New Jersey, they are following best practices of dramatically either doing away with or reducing cash bail. And the sky has not fallen. In fact, crime has gone down, other than they're always going to come out with an outlier. So I just hope that we tell them what best practices are, and the smaller states and what I call the progressive prosecutors know that, because I don't know that the judges are going to do it unless you really come out and change the legislature. I guess that wasn't a short answer, but anyway.
Well, Judge, I just want to add, right, the lawmakers did pass a law so that judges have discretion to use unsecured bail, right? That was enacted a few years ago, but we know that in practice it has been not utilized at all. And we also know that in Maui, there was an attempt through consensus between the prosecutor's office, public defenders, and Judge Beeson, who recently announced his retirement, that they were going to implement a pilot policy for unsecured bail. And I was told that then it went up sort of the channels, and then there's been sort of no further response. And so I think it comes back to, again, who leads? Judiciary is saying, well, we're going to be looking to lawmakers. Lawmakers did pass that law, but it's may and it's not shall, but they're not utilizing it all. And so I think it comes back to the lawmakers. It's in their court to change the law so that the judiciary would need to follow it. I think that is the best solution, and it's the most impactful if we look at other states who have taken that route.
Thank you.
Thank you, Carrie Ann. We'll have further discussion later. Go ahead, Kat.
I just wanted to add one thing on the bail. I've heard that Sylvia Luke really supports HB 2017, which is a good, clean bill. It needs to get a hearing, because if HB 1567 goes to conference, we want to make sure that there's a bill alive that they could lift a provision out and put it in whatever bill is going to pass. But I know Sylvia is supportive of 2017, so we really need to push for a hearing on that bill, because she has a lot of power in the House, well, in the legislature.
Thank you, Kat. As I look at the rest of the room, anyone else care to have comments on the agenda? You can raise your hand. If not, shall move forward on the agenda.
Item number Mark?
Yes, go ahead, Ted.
I noticed Jen Wilbur is on the call. I'd just like to hear what's happening with their bill on community-based programs.
Hi, Jen.
It passed both the first committees so far, so it's moving on to the second committees. And I made a slight change in the House to just delete the word all. It said like all inmates would have to go to community-based work furlough. And I just didn't want that to be a sticking point later on, because not all inmates or people that are released are going to go to community-based work furlough.
Okay, thank you.
Oh, the Senate just stuck all back in.
No, they never took it out. So I caught it in the House. And then I'll catch it in the Senate on the second hearing.
Okay.
What's the number of those bills, Jen?
HB 1776 and SB 2637.
Okay. We submitted testimony on that, Ted. Yeah.
Yeah, we did both.
Okay. Agenda item number 2 talks about proposed legislation in the 2022 legislative session. So I just wanted to report out, it's 2 weeks ago. So we came together, we talked about all the bills that were being presented, to just see what we would support, so that we would have a meeting that we'd say we're going to support these bills, and then we would be able to go out and advocate in the legislature for them. And that was on a Friday, and then by Monday the hearing started. And there was a total of potentially 48 testimonies that could be written, but that we agreed upon. And I'm just here to report, we were able to punch out about 20. Okay. So I appreciate Ted, who did the bulk of the writing. Martha did, Ron, and Mike added some input. But we were able to put 20 out there, and we were able to make a presence in some of the hearings in terms of these bills. So thank you so much. I'm hoping in the next 2 or 3 weeks we can get closer to that 48 number, as most of the bills are still alive or in some form or another from the original. It has been an interesting, when you really look at the bills, and I kind of gave you guys something in a short form, really a lot of reentry stuff, you know, priority. And mm-hmm. there's a real big push in the legislature.
Women.
But for women, yeah. So that was something that I noticed. Front-end system bills, but not as much as we it should be. And then, of course, a lot of reentry stuff, yeah? So this has been a good learning lesson for me to see how everyone is concerned with reentry, yeah? And diversionary programs that we can continue to look at how do we create a seamless and more movable or flowable system. I know that the commission has been on the minds of a lot of the people, a lot of the committees, because the names and the ones that I've gone to, they've always been talked about. So one of the technical challenges, Ted, Mike, Ron, and Martha, is as testimonies are coming to me and I'm creating the format, I'm registered on the legislator website where I submit and say that I'm going to be present for testimony. Yeah. I have attempted with several of the committees and asked that you folks be allowed to come on as well to answer questions. And they have never replied back to me. Yeah. As I believe in some of these, each one of you have a particular expertise that you're probably better than me to be on the committee hearing to express your knowledge, yeah, and have you available for them to ask you. So I'm going in a direction where I'm saying it may be prudent for us for me to ask you folks for you to submit a personal testimony so that you can get into the room, yeah, and then if I'm in the room I can say, you know, that's a Ted Zakayan question, you know, and you're there. I don't know how else, that's my suggestion. I don't know how else to get you into the room so that you can have a verbal or make yourself available to speak. Any comments on that?
When you say you're registered as, you mean as the commission you're registered?
Yes.
Because any one of us can represent the commission.
I understand, but that registration comes with the testimony.
No, I think the problem is whoever submits the testimony gets to have the link where they can testify. And if you don't submit the testimony, then you don't get to testify. You have to watch it on Zoom. So if for example, Martha wrote the testimony and it went out from Martha,
yeah,
representing the commission, Martha is in the room.
No, I know that.
Yeah, so, but Mark, it was your decision that everything will go through you.
Yes, so I'm trying to, with what we've already done, I'm trying to figure out how to get us back in there, how to get you back in the room.
You know, Carrie just sent us something that said that each person can register as individuals or as members of the Oversight Commission. So I haven't gone on the website, but I'll try and do it that way as a member of the Oversight Commission.
But don't you have to submit written testimony before you can give oral testimony?
Yes, you have to submit written testimony, but it's saying that we submit them individually. What we write, Martha submits.
I don't want to submit as an individual.
You want to do it as a member of the commission?
Yeah.
So many agencies actually, you know, submit testimony and then they say, oh, but so-and-so is here and is better to answer that question.
Yeah.
But aren't they generally in the same room?
Well, they're on Zoom, so I think they're in their own offices, but they tell the legislature that this is the commission or this is the agency, and different people will be answering different questions.
Yeah, if I could just make a comment, because we've kind of been exploring this on the ACLU side too, trying to figure out the legislative that system. So each of you can sign up as individuals. There's this part where it asks you to create your own account, and you can have more than one account. You could have your same email, but linked to when you testify, it gives you the option as an individual. You can click that circle, or right below that it says testifying on behalf of, you can put in an agency. You could have more than one agency if you represent more than one agency or organization or whatever group it is. So each time you create that, it gives you the option. And I know sometimes people don't always have the time to have the luxury of getting it in 24 hours before the hearing. But if you know that you want to get into the hearing and you maybe don't have time to draft all of your testimony, you can register at least 24 hours before and just hit the box and just put, you know, where it says comments, you can put oppose, support or comments. And at the very bottom, you can just put comments forthcoming or you'll testify, just so that you get the link sent to you to testify. You could always get the written testimony in late. It will be stamped late, but at least it gives you, they'll send you the link to get into the room. I mean, this is a barrier. I know it's not your issue, but for some of the county councils that have this process, up until literally the last moment, you can look at the agenda and you can call in or you can get the link, even if you didn't submit written testimony. But the state legislative process requires you to go through this. But if you just check the box and send it in, it will send you each a link. And so in theory, any one of you could, quote, represent the commission in the same hearing on the same matter. But you do have to set up that system in advance.
Thank you, Carrie.
You can attach a testimony. I'm going to add to carry on. You can attach a testimony, or they actually provide a box where you can write something real quick.
Yes.
Because of the short turnaround from our previous meeting, kid, that's why I figured I just grab everything now and I just submit real quick, because that last week was crazy. You know, we're trying to get stuff in. We really didn't have time to plan accurately, but this is probably a best something that can do so that each of you can get on now.
Okay, so, I think we ought to each take a look at that and see if we can understand the process and know how to work the process when we have to do that. But Mark, I think we ought to spend some time talking about the bills that were passed that have moved, that are moving right now, and what the amendments are, and whether we agree with the amendments or have concerns with the amendments. Even the bills that pass as is, I know of one bill we wrote where we were partially opposed, and I think we need to reaffirm our positions on these bills. For example, on the pause bill, you know, what's our position on that? I think we need to discuss things like that. So we cannot use the same testimony. In most cases, we can't use the same testimony in the next committee. Except maybe for like the Jen Wilbur's bill. And there are a few like that, but there are some significant bills where we have to refashion our testimonies and our approaches.
Okay, we can go. I know 2516 is the most important one right now, having to do with the new jail pause. We can start with that. Yeah. Creating the amendment calls for, and then Bob, correct me if I'm wrong, calls for the commission to be an active partner in the planning.
Yes.
And it actually did not have a pause. So those are the two things that we asked for, in not the two things we asked for, but in our letter to the WAM and finance, we asked for the pause.
Right. Right.
So if we go back in, or we, not if, what would be the response in our next testimony? Because that's going to finance right now, right, Bob?
No, it goes to judiciary next.
Judiciary, okay.
Bob, is there a Senate companion?
No, there was supposed to be, but there wasn't any.
Okay.
So we're hanging by a thread here, and if I'm looking at my schedule. It doesn't have anything marked on the 14th of February, but it has First Lateral on the 17th.
Right.
Does that mean we have till the 17th to get it out of judiciary?
Yes.
Okay, so.
So we have like 4 days.
Yes, yeah, so 4 working days. When you said 4 days, I thought, oh my God, it's got to be Monday. But okay.
Oh no.
Working. Okay, so I guess that what we'll do is try and get it out of judiciary, and then when it comes into judiciary, maybe some of you people who are more experienced than I do can say what we can do. I don't know if legislators in a subsequent committee put language back in, or whether that's just not viewed as kosher, or how this all works. I'm a novice.
Oh, remember, the Supreme Court had to step in to tell the legislature, you cannot gut a bill at the very last minute with no public testimony at all. They can do whatever the hell they want.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, then that, I think, would be the optimal thing. And you know, frankly, I mean, I think what we need to say is, I think what the community's got to say is that, you know, the community really has turned out for this bill, and all of the experts who have looked at it, and I mean the experts from HCR 85 and the experts from this commission, are unanimous that we're going down the wrong road. And I just don't understand why the legislature can't listen to people who really know something about these matters.
Bob, how much has the department spent so far in the plans and planning of this facility?
$10.4 million.
Wait, how much?
$10.4 million.
So far.
Yeah, and I think $10.4 million, and they're asking for $15 million more this session.
We got to lean on Sylvia.
Ted, maybe you could help with this. I talked to Sylvia about the $15 million, and but how what bill is that money in? I mean, what is
it's in the, whatever the executive budget bill is.
Right.
Okay. So that's the next one we got to really watch, and it seems like
no, they don't hear the executive budget bill. They have these information briefings before the session starts.
So how do we get Sylvia to delete that $15 million? We just talk to her.
We get the community to. Yeah. She's running for LG, so we need to really have the community.
I think that the other way is if you can get to the subject matter chair, with the relevant subject matter chair, to really lean on the committee.
Mm.
Then that'll help.
Okay.
You know, I think the fight on this facility really is going to be in the money committees.
Uh-huh.
You know, the fact that there's a triple referral, it means the prospect for the bill. We still got to push for it, but the prospects for the bill are pretty dim, actually, from the start.
I agree.
Yeah, but so before they lift the shovel, they're going to have spent $25 million just to get ready.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I emailed the commission members on this at the very beginning. After I took a look at the budget bill about how the impact of poor planning. If you look at the WCCC, the WCCC has a capacity of 260, I believe, and they're holding about 200 inmates, and they're about another 100 at OCCC right now. And they're building a new extension at WCCC so they can move all the women to Kailua. So that means if they moved it today and the extension were open, if the extension were open today and they move all the women, they would move about 300 women. They have 260. The capacity is 260. The extension is 176. So they'll have capacity of over 430 for the 300 women. If you look at their budget request from public safety, and it's public, they're asking for 130 new positions because they have the new facility. So I don't know what the dollar amount is, but, and this is going to be a forever cost.
Yes.
So if you don't plan these things well, this becomes the long-term consequence. So I think you know, the importance of planning properly for something like this, like Bob mentioned in an early meeting, that the cost of construction is a small part of the total cost of the facility.
Ted, if I just throw something in, if they build the new jail, they build it today and it had 1,300 beds, and we know it's going to fill to capacity very quickly. There's historical data from other jurisdictions that tells you. But whenever it fills up to its operational capacity of 1,300, if we just use today's dollars, that's $285,000 every single day just to house the inmates in there. And if the jail is built, let's say, in 2 or 3 years, that $219 a day is going to go up. So we're talking probably looking at from a year or two from now going forward, no less than $300,000 a day just for OCCC, just for the men's facility.
Yeah, I think people will debate, you know, what's the cost per day, et cetera, but I think the women's example, the women's facility provides a real life example of what can happen. And I think the problem is that the cost of operation of a correctional facility tends to be inelastic. It's not going to vary. If they need 130 positions to operate it, if the population remains at 300, they're still going to have that. And they're going to have all this excess capacity. If the population goes to the capacity at 430, they'll need that money to operate it. But if it drops by 100, they'll still need about the same amount. Mm-hmm. The variable cost in correctional operation is very small. You know, pennies for electricity, a few dollars for food, that sort of thing, clothing, but the real cost is in staffing.
Yeah, and I think, don't they have like 450 empty beds at the federal correctional facility? They overbuilt that one.
They overbuilt because when they built, the feds have a stock design, and that's the smallest they would build, no matter what our need was.
Therefore, yikes.
So that's correctional economics.
Yeah, right.
Yikes.
Yeah. So.
So I think the approach really on 2516. Is to emphasize what one approach is to really emphasize the long-term costs and what we're tying ourselves into by proceeding without proper planning.
Yeah. And
the other point on the new OCCC is if the plan is to is a PPP, that means the private developer will go out and get the funding. Then they'll do usually a 20-year or 30-year buyback thing.
Right.
And that 20 to 30 years, the public entity owns the facility, but we pay off the loan in essence, mm-hmm. for the private public entity at $500 million. They're going to be talking about like more than $50 million a year to pay the private entity. Now, in terms of the correctional budget, this is going to be operating costs, within the Department of Public Safety budget.
Right.
So the Department of Public Safety will have to go get that money every year and lock it in. So over 20 to 30 years, I'm sure we're going to have budget issues with the entire state of Hawaii, and the governor will say everybody has to cut your budget by X percent. This $50 million plus in the budget is untouchable.
Yeah.
So you have to find other things to cut. And what usually gets cut when in times like that, Martha knows.
Services.
Yep.
And that $50 million also raises the budget. So when it comes to a 10% cut, it makes that cut greater than if you just had a regular operating budget.
Yep. Oh, yeah. Can we put all this in some testimony? These, I mean, you guys say it so well. I hope we have a little bit of time. If you can work that, yeah, I think that's very, very compelling way to approach it.
Yeah. You know, another thing is that experience with private prisons that develop prisons and then lease it out to a jurisdiction. At the end of their 20 or 30 years, there's that big balloon payment that Ted
very often there's
about.
A balloon payment. You're right.
And the problem is that I think what we're talking about is to have them maintain the facility. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, oh no, because in other jurisdictions, at the end, they had a big balloon payment and a facility that was crumbling. Because they really use not very good practices. And when they built Saguaro, they built the drains in the showers too high. And within 2 months, I was getting a lot of calls from people there saying the modules are flooded. So I went to the department and said that could be a public health issue because they're getting dirty water in their modules. And Tommy Johnson was the deputy director at that time, and he investigated and came back and said there was no problem. But then in 3 months, they shut down all the showers because the drains were too high. So they don't use best practices in construction. And that's my concern, because we might be ending up with a huge debt and a crumbling facility.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to talk about facilities that were built and don't work, I mean, take a look at the mental health facilities over in Kaneohe. I mean, it's been built for 2 years and it's empty because there's so many problems that nobody can move in yet.
I'm going to add one more example, because, you know, when we talk about the new jail, I'm always advocating or speaking about what investment is being made in the system. You know, how we're going to build a jail and we haven't really defined how the system's going to work around it. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just being built in and for itself and for bodies.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it bothers me when they start talking about all the programs that can be afforded because this new structure is going to allow opportunities. And I've heard it before. Yeah. So when we look as a correctional officer, the best correctional facility in the state of Hawaii is in Kapolei. Okay? It was built by the judiciary. Okay? About 30 beds, maybe $30, $40 million. Don't quote me on that. Yeah? But it was built after they started juvenile justice reform. Now, of course, the planning may have been before that, and I'm not sure about that, Martha. But what I wanted to share with you is that they had all the tweaks, like you hear now, it's going to provide this, it's going to provide that. But at the same time, they were improving the system.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And how important is that? Because today, this 30-bed, $30 million facility often has single-digit population. 6, 7. Yeah. Because the system resolved the problem of the flow into the facility, to the effect that my population at the youth facility is like 20. Today it's 17, you know, and I have I used to have close to 100 beds. I have 30 now, you know, because the system activated, yeah? you built the prison, but at the same time, we're going to invest in the system. This is just backup for the most vulnerable.
And I want to remind people, those changes that took place, the judiciary had the power to institute those changes themselves without any help from the legislature.
Yeah.
Chose to do it. And that's why it happened. Our legislature had nothing to do with what happened with juvenile justice.
Yeah. But it's really interesting, though, because with the leadership of OIS and the judiciary, who brought on CAMD, Human Services, you know, they were able to put together, and the service providers, were able to put together that alternative diversion that created the system that we currently have in what we call in reform. It's the same agencies that worked with the women when we brought them home. Yeah, it's the same, but for some reason we're stagnated with the men. Yeah,
Mark.
Same agencies. Yeah.
Can I jump in?
Go ahead, Mike.
I mediate, and the way I mediate is to incentivize. And we need to, and you just gave the classic perfect testimony. We've incentivized Judge Browning and you and the juvenile system to take care of the kids without unnecessarily incarcerating them. And we need to do that with the men and the women. So I want to think, wrap our minds around incentivizing. I know we can try to bully people into not having bail and this and that, but if we get everybody aboard, I want to incentivize them. Does that make any sense to you, Mark?
Yes, Mike.
Yeah.
Is there any way, you know, if we could just cut out what you guys just said from this recording and snip it and put it in a video, we could send it over to the members of the Finance Committee, because just to hear you talking this way spontaneously is just really powerful. If there's any way to do that, this is what they really need to hear, is from the people who've been there, who've seen it, who've been in the middle of it. And, you know, it makes a big difference. So maybe we can look into that. I mean, I can try and look into that, because to hear Ted and you, Mark, talk about this, is it's a game changer.
Commissioners, if I may add, you know, we've tried to highlight it before lawmakers that the juvenile system has been a success in terms of reducing the population. And so that sort of process of community judiciary leading those efforts should be replicated for the adult system as well. But for whatever reason to date, there hasn't been much of an appetite for it. And I can share with you that I remember reading some testimony from the judiciary in the past relating to the jail or prison building or comments, and the thought, the response is, well, now that there's the Criminal Justice Research Institute, they're going to be focusing on pretrial population, but that we're going to defer to the Oversight Commission to sort of deal with the quote jail and planning. But I think if there is an outreach to judiciary, and there's two judges here who probably can effectuate that, I think the other part of it, it was very disappointing. But if you look at the written testimony of the judiciary in response to SB 2514 probation reform, typically the judiciary weighs in and just says comments, right? And they do a number of comments. But if you read between the lines, they said comments, and then if you read the next line, we oppose, and they had about 8 or 9 pages of opposition as to why they did not support the probation reform bill, which means stopping incarceration for technical violations and to have an earned time credit system. It was almost as if we were reading talking points coming from the prosecutor's office rather than judiciary. So something is happening there, but I think having the judiciary to also take ownership in this and to be a part of it and to look at the success from the juvenile system and to replicate that, I think that is a good stakeholder approach, because it really takes multi-branches of government to be working together with the community's input.
Thank you, Jerry.
Mark? Yes. What do you want to do about 2516?
So 2516, one question before I really answer that. Is it going to be like the identification ones? We support some, but we oppose certain, or do we oppose the amendment?
I don't know. What's our position on the bill itself? I guess we're asking the same question.
Yeah, so we advocated for a pause. The amendment says no pause.
Yeah, so I think we have that's point one.
Yeah,
we still advocate for the pause.
Yes. And I don't, and you know, Ted, this is will be another opportunity to say, hey, we don't have staff.
Yeah.
You know, what do you expect? You know?
Well, even before that, my question would be, what does the term full partner mean?
Good point.
Yeah. We may have access to the Zoom site number.
Yeah.
Sorry, you guys. Yeah, that's the two things. Further clarification, Ted, would be the remark on the testimony on what a full partner is.
So if we say, if we advocate for a reinstatement of the
original intent
and ask about full partner, but also put a little more some more detail on our arguments instead of saying just look at our paper.
Right.
Okay. Okay, I'll take a crack at it.
Thank you, Ted. Thank you, folks, for that discussion. Any last comments?
I just wanted to make a comment about the detention center. This is a little off subject, but we're talking about the detention center at Kapolei. I want to say the design is a very harsh design, and the judges were concerned. The design was done before the reform was taking place. It is very dark. It is very heavy on hardware. I don't ever want to see us repeat that for kids again. HYCF is a much better design than what we have in Kapolei.
I believe I walked in it 2012, 2013, and I made the remark that this is the best correctional facility in the state of Hawaii, you know, and Judge Browning did share with me that he had no say.
Yeah, it was strictly the CIP people in judiciary, and the judges were very concerned they had no say because it was too much hardware, too hard a facility. Even the part that is supposed to be unlocked for runaways. So they unlock the doors within that module, but they still can't leave the module.
Yeah.
I mean, no, we don't want to repeat that again for kids.
Thank you, Martha. Okay, Ted, so we can we'll move on to.
Can I just add one thing about public-private partnerships that I think the legislature doesn't quite understand? It's that when we do that, then contracts actually trump legislation. So we need to ask them, do you want a government run by corporations, or do you want a government of the people, by the people, and for the people? Because I think they just don't get this. They think we don't have the money, so let somebody else do it. But the bottom line is, we are foreclosing the future of our keiki by doing these things. We are selling taxpayer-funded assets to private corporations. And I just wanted to underline that. Contracts trump legislation, and that is scary.
Thank you, Kat. I was going to drop down to that identification bill. Hold on.
Got a poison pill.
I don't think that has... I haven't indicated that it's going into the judiciary in the House and WHAM. Oh, Senate and WHAM, they're still moving with the JDC and the JHA. Have anybody heard any different?
No, but when it comes, they haven't scheduled it to my knowledge, but when it comes up, we've got to get rid of that last line that says basically that the person inside has to ask for an ID. It should be part of their packet. It should be pro forma.
So Ted, that continues to be our testimony that we submitted, you wrote and we submitted,
yeah.
And we just have to track it.
So we but it's also, Mark, when you testify, do not just stand on your testimony. You have to say that we support it in part. We do not support, and say it loudly, we do not support this section and why we do not support it. You know, as I told you, you can just make quick notes of the things you want to say. You don't read the whole testimony.
I'm learning.
Yeah.
I'm learning. I can't use the excuse I'm waiting for Wham and Finn. I got to get them there first. So. Okay. Was there any other, which ones you we needed to talk about, Ted?
I'm not sure.
Those are the two big ones.
What other Carrie bills are moving that have
Carrie
been amended?
Ann mentioned, I think it was Carrie Ann, mentioned that the bill that was going to change 2305 and one House Bill 1739 to amend 179.
They're moving.
They're moving, yeah. So
and,
we don't have any
so
problems
is,
with that one.
No, there's been no, everybody just agrees. The visitation center, the Senate killed it because the House HB 1741 is going to be the vehicle.
Okay. I feel a lot of the what has been heard in terms of the reentry efforts in the Wyava Visitation Center, some of the bills surrounding women's, like the circles, restorative justice, education, not all of them have been heard, but the ones that have been heard have moved on. Ted.
The circles are moving?
Yes.
Yeah, that's good.
They like that.
I think the Native Hawaiian and the public safety working with the OHA for Native Hawaiian programming is moving.
Mm-hmm. Kat, you might remember that some years ago, we did get an appropriation for the circles and the governor did not release the money.
Yeah. Yep, another good idea. But,
but you know, we got to keep trying.
Carry on the good time for the probation, is that the parole did not make it, but probation is still going forward, yeah? She might have just jumped off, okay.
They might actually be hearing the House versions of parole and probation because the Senate killed the parole bill, but the probation's moving.
Okay.
Yes, we got a verbal commitment. We got a verbal commitment. They're going to hear it on the House side, but again, no notice has been issued yet.
Yes. Same thing for the solitary bill, 3344. Oh, on Wednesday. Yes, we're doing the notice and I haven't seen it yet. And I've been stressing.
That's the main ones. Of course, the bail reform. Yeah.
Yes.
You know, Commission, if I could go out on a limb, I mean, if there is a way for the commission to reach out to the chair or chairs, either House or Senate or both, and saying that the Oversight Commission is respectfully requesting a hearing on these measures, I think that they would give more weight to hearing from the Oversight Commission because they've been often saying, we want to hear from the Oversight Commission. And again, part of the task of this commission is, right, population reduction, which we know would result in that. So that is one possible angle to at least keep the measure alive and have it moving and to have public discourse. It's food for thought.
So one interesting note is that the chair of House Judiciary, Mark Nakashima from District 1 on the Big Island, he's kind of been handing over his committee to his vice chair, Scott Matayoshi, who is kind of conservative and really takes the prosecutor's amendments a lot. And so I'm really concerned because I think Mark, you can talk to Scott, kind of difficult to talk to. He has a very firm set of ideas. It's all about law enforcement.
Okay, thank you, Carrie Ann and Kat, that would be good. As we can see, there's still a lot in time in trying to create a picture of all these testimonies and bills that we have moving forward. I'm still trying to work out an easier way to navigate this, but I do have one more thing I want to talk about. Is there any further discussion on these bills?
Mark, this is not on the bills, but and maybe this is not a good time, but I was not aware of House Bill 2015, which is sponsored by Jonathan Osorio and some of the people at the university to create a Ho'okalaniki Institute for restoration and something
healing.
Else.
Healing.
Within the criminal justice system, but it would be located within the William S. Richardson School of Law. And it would kind of be a merging of Hawaiian culture and the correctional system. It's a wonderful idea. And the bill is going to be heard today. I think it'll pass, but going forward, it might be one that the Oversight Commission would like to consider. It's just a very positive bill. It's wonderful.
And it actually is an outgrowth of the grant for the Kellogg Foundation that a group of us worked on last year that the that Mark's group got. But it's really a collaboration that has never happened before. Law school, Hawaiian studies, the architecture department, and a broad cross section of the community. And this is the first time in my 25 years that I've ever seen this happen. So this is really, I think, important. 2015 HB 2015.
Mark, may I jump in a little bit?
Go ahead.
Ho'okalaniki was the word when the Chief Justice Moon, we had a committee on restorative justice, and the right. Supreme Court wasn't sure what that meant. We Palani Vaughn and Pucky and myself and Judge Raffetto, we came up, the word means to me righteous equity or restorative justice. So the Chief Justice Moon, to his credit, issued a single kind of an order, and that has kind of languished for 10 or 20 years. Restorative justice is the way to go. So, and I think Lauren Walker has written on it. She's a senior author. We've taught it for a couple of years. So Bob, I thank you for bringing it. John Osorio is the perfect guy, along with the Dean, Avi Soifer, and the new Dean. What is her name, Eileen?
Camille Nelson.
Camille Nelson, she's wonderful. So this is a huge effort, and the Academy, meaning the university, has every reason to get in here and help us. So I support what Bob's saying. And I think, I don't know what this the traction of this committee is, but we should sure support it. Ho'okalaniki.
HB 2015 relating to the University of Hawaii establishes the Ho'okalaniki, a criminal legal system institute for restoration and healing at the University of Hawaii William S. Richardson School of Law. You know, when we look at what does, how do you move from a punitive model to a therapeutic model? How do we involve culture? Yeah. How do we include this type of discussion in what we do as a commission? I'm glad you brought that up, Robert. Thank you. I've been part of those emails. And this is one of two I wanted to talk about today. That I believe that the commission can support in having other agencies like the University of Hawaii work side by side with us in reform within public safety. Yeah. Maybe you guys can punch it up more on your computer at this time, but if you have any questions, we can continue to further talk about it. I want to bring one more up. Senate Bill 2482. This is along the same lines of creating a movement within the state systems, yeah, like HB 2015 would do for the University of Hawaii within themselves. Senate Bill 2482, this bill would establish a temporary office of wellness and resilience within the office of the governor, authorize the office to address issues and implementation and implement solutions to improve wellness and resilience, including issues and solutions identified by the trauma-informed care task force. Yeah, that's a task force that was created out of last year's legislative session. Tia Robertson is the chair. I bring in this up as, you know, trauma-informed care is a movement that's beginning to gain grounds in the systems in Hawaii. Yeah. when we talk about trauma-informed care and the experience that our people go through, I learned about trauma-informed care in a conference on the East Coast back in 2007. And at that conference, I brought that information back, and we began a movement at the Women's Community Correctional Center that we called the Trauma-Informed Care Initiative. Yeah, and we were lucky at that time with WCCC and its partners. We got together and we were able to get support from the Center of Trauma-Informed Care out of on the East Coast. And they provide a lot of technical support in moving us and recalibrating all of our programs around this idea of how do you provide safety and trust, peer support, collaboration, and empowerment for the women within the facility and in the transitional period. And pretty much the success of what happened in that my tenure at that time was based on trauma-informed care initiative. So I really want to get your approval to support this as well. And we can, maybe you, I sent the email out before we started the meeting. Any comments on these two suggestions?
Well, on the last bill, SB 2482, it's on its way to WAM. So it just has one more committee and it'll be scheduled after the 17th. The 2015 is being heard at 2:15 today in JHA, the House Judiciary.
Okay.
Mark, I strongly support it. Justice Sabrina McKenna has had that initiative under the Chief Justice. The idea of, rather than say burnout or compassion fatigue, which has been a subject of mine, I think I would rather call it wellness. It's maybe a little, but we need to really support this because we don't want to get too cranky. I support it.
How do you feel, Ted?
I support it, but I would like to see I would like to see this initiative also address the needs of people who work in institutions such as prisons, jails, hospitals, et cetera, et cetera. I don't know, you know, they're part of the community and they certainly, and it could be first responders. They have tremendous amount of stress. And they, the amount of stress they have certainly impacts members of the community.
I agree 100%, Ted. And Justice McKenna is very wise about this. We've had a couple of conferences among the judges.
I know the task force has a huge representation of many state agencies on it already, Ted. I can get more information for you. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, but for example, if somebody is representing public safety, they're looking at trauma-informed care for the inmates. But then who's looking at the staff? Because the quality of the level of wellness among correctional staff has a tremendous impact on the level of wellness among the inmates.
Well said.
And Martha? I just have one comment is that the legislation is saying put this in the governor's office. The governor's office no longer does this kind of function anymore. For a while, they had a tremendous amount of things in the governor's office. And about 30 years ago, they moved them all to the departments. So that may be a stumbling block, is it saying the governor's office. It will be the home for it. The other thing is it says it'll be temporary. When something's temporary, usually there's a sunset date included in the legislation and there is none in this. So those are just technical things. I support the purpose. I have no problem with that. And I agree with Ted. It needs to be expanded to work with, to assist those people who have an impact on the people the bill is addressing.
That could be bullet points, right?
Yeah, you may not want to bring it up. I'm just saying it's just something that may come up in the hearing. The governor's office may say, you know, we're not interested in having things sent to our office because they don't do that anymore. But just for your information.
Okay. Ron, any comments?
Oh, I agree what's been said, you know, so particularly Ted. I'm just now looking at the bill here. And but I agree with what has been said. We should strongly support this.
I'll take a shot at these two, and share it with you folks by the end of the day. In the point where we are right now in the session, I don't know how to have any further conversation. to bring some sanity to my thought process right now. But if there's no more further discussion, I'll ask the commissioners at this time. We do have a scheduled meeting next week. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have a short time in that meeting to see what has occurred between now and then, and should we require another type of meeting like this at the end of February or beginning of March, we'll make that decision next week. Yeah. With that being said, commissioners, I'll just take some final remarks from the community, and then we'll adjourn. Go ahead, Bob.
I'm just asking. I know you're going to ask for the restoration of the pause in 2516. Is the commission also going to support restoring the committee of stakeholders to participate as well? I wasn't clear on that. In other words, restore everything that was deleted or just restore the pause part of it.
My understanding was going to support the original intent of our letter to WAM and finance.
Okay, thank you.
That would include community participation, correct, Mark?
Great, thank you.
With the added comments that, you know, staff.
Yeah. Thank you.
Importance of staff. Kat, Carrie, anybody else want any comments before we end? Okay. Thank you all for coming today. Hopefully that this meeting wasn't as bad as the last hearing you was in. At least it's friendly. But appreciate the legislature for everything that they're trying to do. It must be crazy for them. So thank you all. We'll be in touch, commissioners, and we'll see you next week for our regular meeting.
Thank you all for everything you're doing.
Get weller, Margaret. I mean, Martha. Get weller.